Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to more than 1,500 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my special guest is Jeremy McDonald, author of the new book, The Sovereign Mindset, Unlock Your Divine Potential. Jeremy is a mindset mastery coach, quantum healer, Reiki master, and best-selling author with more than 25 years of experience bridging the corporate and spiritual worlds. As the executive producer of large-scale metaphysical events like the Spirit Heart Cruise and the Inner Temple Symposium, and the host of Mystic Dialogue on Ethereal TV, Jeremy inspires audiences around the world to unlock their divine potential. With a master's in adult education and a background in learning and development for Fortune 500 companies, he blends practical strategies with spiritual wisdom, helping people release deep-seated blocks, align with their soul, and step fully into their authentic selves. Jeremy's mission is to empower humanity through remembrance, healing, and inspired action, bridging the ancient wisdom with practical tools to help individuals awaken their divine potential and live in sovereign truth. For more information, you can visit his website, which is jeremymcdonald.net. And with that, I'd like to welcome Jeremy to the show. Good day, Jeremy.
Hey, Robert. Thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it and looking forward to our time together.
It is my pleasure. And the one thing I like about talking with you is that you really provide some practical perspectives for people to improve their life. So I'm looking forward to today's show.
Absolutely.
So we have to start with, since this is Bringing Inspiration to Earth, what inspired you to write The Sovereign Mindset at this particular time?
You know, it just kind of came through because it had been like 13 years since my previous book, Peace Be Still, and it just, one day, it just clicked, and it just came through, and it was basically I had to live the book before I could, you know, write about it. So it's a lot of it's very practical stuff because of things that I actually went through. You know, my mother transitioned in 2012, and I had to go through that process of grieving and all of the other things that come along with, you know, not having a parent on this planet anymore. And, you know, and then all of the awful the part where we're just out there living our lives. And, you know, you make mistakes, you have a lot of successes, you have what we deem as failures. But I believe that failures are opportunities to grow. So it just, at the moment, I was ready to do it. And it just came through. And I always call it divine inspiration, where the, you know, the spirit, your soul, and everything just kind of come together at one point, and, you know, it just starts flowing out of you. And that was where it came from. So it was just an opportunity to finally get all those thoughts and feelings I've been speaking about on stages and put it on paper.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the one thing about timing is that quite often you have to live a certain experience before you get to the point of being able to write about it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what would you say, just, I know the whole book is about the sovereign mindset, but for listeners to get an idea of what you mean, can you kind of give us like a high level view of what the sovereign mindset is?
Absolutely, yeah. So the sovereign mindset is about taking responsibility and accountability for your own life. And it's also about that moment where that body, mind, and soul start working together in flow with each other. So when you start taking responsibility for your life as opposed to having your energy over, you know, wherever, it could be, you know, with your family that maybe wasn't nice to you when you were a kid, or some person that was mean to you in school, or, you know, that boss that you didn't get along with, and your energy is in those places that disempower you, And it's finally that moment where you say, no, I don't have to live based on that energy anymore. And I can bring my energy into my center, and I can finally marry the inner world and live in this sovereignty where I'm, you know, I get to live my life and flow with the energy of the universe and be who I was born to be. And so to me, the sovereign mindset, and that came up because I kept on witnessing these moments. I mean, we've all had these moments of attracting the world around us. And we see these moments where we're like, wow, that really just happened. And we're just so excited. Well, I started looking at that over and over again, and I started thinking, what is that? What is it that made that different than this other time that I wanted something and it didn't happen? And, you know, I tell a lot of stories in there about those moments where I'm, you know, I wanted something to happen. I put an intention out there. I started acting on it. It's almost like it magically just came in. I was like, what was that all about? Well, it was about that moment where you're in a vibrational match with what you're looking for because you're living in your truth. You're living in your sovereignty. And so I just call it the sovereign mindset because that's really what it's all about, is really ruling and understanding and living in alignment with your body, mind, and soul.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And you mentioned about, you know, those moments, you know, that one was experienced that can sometimes be extraordinary. But in the book, you also say that ordinary living moments are just as profound as the mystical. So, you know, for people who don't have those mystical moments, we should revel in the ordinary?
Yeah. So a lot of people look at all these amazing moments. Like, I had a shared death experience with my mother, and I've been interviewed about it, and everybody's like, oh, that's great. And it was great. But there's also those moments where I've made major mistakes in my life, and by the realms of what the world of man says, where I've made a wrong decision and, you know, lost a lot of money, or stayed in a relationship longer than I should have, and instead of moving, or not spoke my truth and you know, address my boundaries. And so you start to look at those and you start saying, well, those are just as profound as the shared death experience, or these opportunities, or these areas where people consider them magical. And I'm like, well, all those things in your life help you grow as a soul. And so for those that don't have those, what people deem as mystical or magical moments, trust me, you're having them. But really pay attention to every aspect of your life. And trust, and when I say this, you're really going to see a life that's a lot more fully enriched and a lot more fully engaging. And so that's why I started to look at that, because we're always looking for those cool aha moments, or these profound shifts, or these mystical moments. But every moment of every day is magical. And it's an opportunity for your soul to grow and really understand who you are and living in your heart. And so I started noticing where I was, you know, as a healer, I was constantly trying to fix everybody, you know, constantly trying to help everybody. And so I started looking at that, and I started thinking, well, that's not necessarily living in my sovereignty if it goes against what I know to be true. So if I'm trying to help this person and give them advice, but they never listen, and I know I need to walk away, and I keep on doing it, to me, that's ordinary living and saying, you know, that's a boundary. I'm not going to continue crossing this line if they're not ready to hear it. And it's not always about them disrespecting you. It's also about them just not being ready to hear what you have to say, you know, because they're just not that vibrational match with what you're looking at or talking about. And so it's just one of those things where I'm sure we've all been in those jobs where you don't feel appreciated or valued, or situations where you don't feel appreciated or valued, and you know you need to walk away, and we don't. We hold on. Well, that's what we talk about in the book, because that's going against yourself.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's important. For me, it used to be a lot more challenging for the letting go and walking away, just because I wanted the help. But then, like you say, you know, if the person is not ready to hear or to act on any information they receive from you, then you're really not doing anyone any favor.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that if you're going against yourself and harming you, how are you leading by example to the person that you're trying to help? You're trying to show them, don't go against yourself and don't go against your soul, but you're doing the same thing by trying to help them. And even though they don't consciously know that you are doing that, they can energetically feel it on some level.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just one of those things when somebody's living really in alignment in that now of the moment and in balance, you can start to really see, you can start to feel and see that, hey, this person's really authentic, and you can hear it in their energy and feel it in their energy. And even if people aren't really conscious of energy, even at a subconscious level, they can understand it and feel it.
Yeah. You know, that's the one thing, too, that I've noticed is that some people who are authentic really live a life in alignment, you know, with, you know, their true self. And many, like you say, some people may not even understand the idea behind energy and how it all works. And actually, for me, it seems that those people are extra special because they're, you know, living a life without the effort of having to, you know, try and make conscious good decisions, that they're doing it naturally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned briefly about the shared death experience with your mother. I don't know if many people have heard of the idea of a shared death experience. So can you share with us, you know, exactly what that was?
Yeah, so it's actually similar to a near-death experience in a sense where you actually experience some of the sensations of what a soul goes through when they're dying and leaving their physical body. And so in my case, what happened is I was in my mother's hospice room, and when she transitioned and left her body, I felt my body, my energy pull out of my body at the same time. And very shortly after that, I had somebody tap me on the shoulder, one of the nurses, and say, "Mr. McDonald, your mother has passed." And that pulled me in my back in my body just enough to be conscious and, you know, get up and walk around. But I had the sensation of actually leaving my body. And so that's the partial of that. And then for about a week after that, we had a memorial, and I actually had an experience where I could hear her all week talking to me. I could hear her because I was literally in the middle of writing my first book, Peace Be Still. And I heard her say, "Well, I already know what she wrote in that book, Jared," because I thought, "You're never going to get to see my book," and all these things were going on. And I was just excited for her. You know, we want to have our parents mm-hmm. to be proud of us. And well, I was after her memorial, and she stepped into my body, and she said, "This is what heaven feels like." And I lost all sensation of pain or anxiety, and it felt like I was the drop in an ocean. Mm-hmm. And so it was just such a cool experience. And what it did for me is opened me up to new possibilities. Because then what she said is, "I left my body because I needed to teach you, and I could teach you better on this side, how to get in touch with your feminine side." And now that seems to be a really touchy subject for certain men, but we have to have a balance between the divine feminine and divine masculine within ourselves so that we can, you know, have a flow of energy and be in touch with our emotions on a healthy level. And mm-hmm. also, you know, be able to still act and live in this world. So that was the shared death experience. And I didn't even know what it was, to be quite honest with you, until the memorial came along. Somebody said, "Dr. Raymond Moody is going to be in town next month, and you should go." Yeah. And I didn't even know who Raymond Moody was at the time, but I went, and I went to a seminar, and ended up, he started talking, I asked a question about what happened. He said, "Sounds like you had a shared death experience." And I went up to him and talked to him afterwards, got his email address, and then he was on my show, and, you know, we started interacting with each other over the last, you know, 13 years. And so I learned more about what a shared death experience was, and that this sensation has happened to a lot of people, and, you know, and they don't really fully understand what's happened. Well, what's happened is they've kind of experienced, because of their closeness to that person, or other various reasons, that they had an experience of the the dying process or the transition process of a soul leaving their physical body.
Wow, that must have been really some experience. Now, you indicated that through that experience, when someone goes through something like that, that it's really important to be able to use that experience to better ourselves.
Yeah.
So how, in which way or ways did that experience improve you or make you better?
Well, it made some pretty profound effects on me, because it's what a lot of people do when we talk about the near-death experience and shared death experiences. They get caught up on this, that I'm, you know, you get a taste of what heaven feels like. And here's the reality. We can have heaven here on earth. And the truth is, so it's our attachments to things that really get us hung up. And so when we get attached to something, like one of my things was, like I was saying earlier, I wanted to heal somebody or help somebody, or, you know, attached to how people should be, my expectations of how they should be. And, you know, one of the things that taught me is that if I don't have, I can love people and not be attached to the outcome, or even my dreams. I can have dreams and act on them and not be always attached to the outcome. And so what it did for me is this. I started letting things go with my friends and loved ones and started working on myself, really working on loving myself on a deeper level, finding even more peace in my life, started looking at my own health and the energy that I was projecting out to the world, looking at my own insecurities. And so when I started looking at that, I noticed that the people that I love, they started changing. And it wasn't because I was constantly trying to lecture them or give them advice or expected them to change. I just noticed that as I worked on myself, they started working on themselves. And energetically, what ended up happening is that what I know happened is they started seeing me change. They started seeing me get happier. They started seeing me not react to things. They started seeing me become more proactive. They started seeing me act on dreams and work hard on them and have perseverance and continue to, and never to give up. And then they started seeing my health get better and act on those things and really started working on myself. And they saw me make mistakes and make real big ones. And then I would admit that I made those mistakes. And so then I started watching them. And they started doing the same things.
Mm.
And so what that shared death experience did for me is, because heaven is about flow. And so we're constantly flowing in and out, and we're as above, so below. And if, like I mentioned, I was like a drop in an ocean. So an ocean doesn't sit there and try to hold on to the surface of the beach. It doesn't say, no, I need to hold on to this. It flows in and it flows out, and it flows in and it flows out. It doesn't try to pull Europe towards the United States, you know, the Atlantic Ocean. It hits the land, it pushes back and it flows back, but it's never harmful. And then it may take some of the ground with it because it flows in and out. And this really gets down to science. And so you start looking at that and you start saying, well, if I'm a part of this, if we're all one, then why am I continuing to hold on to situations? And then it goes into and says, you start to look at things and people that you love and care about, and you have to let go of them. And you're reminded that if they're in my divine plan, then I can't lose them.
Mm-hmm.
They may be gone for 3 or 4 years. They may be gone for a day. They may be gone for a week. Or, hey, they may just be around all the time. And I've watched my friends and my connections and the people I love, I've watched them not only grow, but I've also, you know, some of them I'm not as close to, where I used to see them every day. But we still love each other. But our lives have changed. We've grown. We've become different people. And so I was in my late 30s when my mother passed away. I'm in my 50s now. And you start to look at how this energy works. And I feel more energetic and more youthful now at 51, almost 52 years old, than I did in my late 30s. And so what that shared death experience showed me is eternal life comes with allowing and acting in the moments that you're supposed to. Divine timing, divine order, divine plan, make it easy. And so, when you really look at that, then that's just life all around. So I can make, you know, I can either live in hell down here, or I can live in heaven. But what ends up happening is a lot of times people start to, they're always looking to the future because they don't want to experience what's going on now, or they're so far in the past because they're still living in the trauma that they've experienced in the past. And the only way to create and live in a sovereign mindset is to be in this now of the moment.
Yeah.
So that's what that shared death experience taught me. And when she mentioned living, you know, more in my divine feminine, and being in balance with my divine masculine, it means that at times when there's a dance, I call it the dance with God, the male aspect leads, but the female aspect flows. And when the male dips her, you know, down in the tango or whatever, the ballroom dancing, she allows, and then she creates. And as she folds and allows, he's inspired to, with strength, to hold her and protect her. And so there's, but it's a flow. It is not a domination. It is not anything other than these two souls are merging and flowing together. Well, it's the two aspects of you that are flowing. And so that's what that shared death experience showed me. And I could probably go on with metaphors for the 45 minutes, but you know, it's really just, you have to find that inside of yourself.
Yeah. I understand. Now, one more thing about your mother.
Yeah.
She was a healer and a shaman, and she did influence in the teaching of In Lakek, Laket?
And Lakesh.
Lakesh. Okay, thank you. I knew I was going to butcher that. So tell us what that is and how has that affected you?
Quite simply, it just means I am another you. So your main name might be Robert, my name might be Jeremy. But on a spiritual and soulful level, that's our physical human names. But truthfully, we're a part of something even greater. And inside is an entire universe inside of you, and inside is an entire universe inside of me. And we're connected at a spiritual and soulful level. And so when I look at another person and I make a judgment about them, then what I'm doing is I'm judging myself. And because chances are, whatever it is I'm judging in them, I've got going on inside of myself. So here's where we get into the physical world. The spiritual world is that we're all energetically on the same, we're basically the same inside. But if we look at who we are on the physical level, I've got insecurities, you've got insecurities, I make mistakes, you make mistakes. And what are those mistakes? Are they really mistakes? Are the opportunities for each one of us to grow. The veil is covered over us so that we can't fully see everything on a physical level. But on a soulful level, we can see greatness and we can see into the infinity. So when she taught me En Lakesh, I started looking at the world and saying, well, wait a second, even down to the trees and everything else, when you go on an energetic level, the animals, they're on an energetic level, we're all just pure energy. And so what the Mayans were trying to say is that, you know, we are always looking at other people and what they're doing. And when we do that, when I'm looking at another man or a woman and saying, oh, what are they doing? Well, then I'm missing the opportunity to look outside of myself. I'm in their Garden of Eden, so to speak. And mine's got all these, like, weeds growing, and I'm not mowing the lawn over here. I'm over picking and pruning yours when that's your job.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But. Well, you know, and there's so much judgment that we sometimes just fall into that we really, you know, should sometimes take a step back if we find ourselves judging a person or a situation and just kind of look, you know, within what is it that has us, you know, examining this particular action or person and passing judgment.
Yeah, but you really think about it too. Like, I disempower myself by being in judgment of you. So I'm busy over here work, you know, judging you, and I'm missing the opportunity to live my life fully.
Yeah.
And so, what's the old saying? Not my circus, not my monkey. I mean, and it's the human part of us to be too busy in your area, but I'm missing all this opportunity to live over here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now, you talk in your book about having gone through the dark night of the soul. I know that kind of experience personally. Can you, and right now with so many challenges happening for people, they may be right in the middle of that dark night. So can you tell us, how would you explain that particular state of being? And, you know, how did that shape your path in your book?
You know, what I want to say to everybody is if you're going through that hard time, and that's what the dark night of soul is, it's one of those very intense, almost everything feels like the whole world is working against you. Everything is happening. What I want to say to you is that this too shall pass. And it may seem like the worst of the worst. I mean, losing my mother was losing my best friend. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, that was in the physical sense. But who I've become, the man I've become in that 13 years since I lost her, the experiences I've had, the ability and the strength that I've gotten as a result of her not being around has been profound. And so this too shall pass means that this, yeah, right now, you might be going through something that really doesn't feel good. And I can guarantee you, if you look inside and start looking at what's going on and start building those new building blocks on there and building a foundation on there, you'll look back at your dark night of the soul and why you went through it, because I had to shake the tree up and build you stronger. So my dark night of the soul, my biggest one, was in 2006. I had built this entire illusion about my life. I was a vice president of a mortgage company. I had this job and this title and all these kind of things. And I needed all those things because I didn't really feel good about myself. So I built this, a house of cards, so to speak, and that house of cards was knocked over because there was no foundation built on rock. And many, many years later, I went through something similar. But that time, I didn't fall apart because my foundation was built on rock.
Mm-hmm.
And because my foundation was built on rock, I didn't necessarily have what people would deem as a dark night of the soul, because inside, I was strong. Emotionally, energetically, spiritually, physically. And here's the reality. You're never going to escape in your life adversity. You're never going to escape challenges. And I have people all the time tell me, I can't wait to get off this planet. Well, I hate to break it to you. Either you're going to experience it now and learn from it and grow from it, or you're going to experience it later. And we have this great thing called a repeat program. It's called reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you miss it this time, you keep on coming back and keep on coming back and keep on coming back until you get the lesson. You're never going to escape the lesson. And so embrace those lessons. Walk towards them. Allow them in. And so the darkness of the soul, what it did for me is it started to make me realize, well, wait a second. This is a blessing. It's not a curse.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's saying to my soul, I know you're ready for this. I know you're ready to go through this. So you can really alchemize your energy into something stronger. And so that's where, and I'm very passionate about this, because people run from adversity. And I say, run towards it. Run
yeah.
towards it so you can get stronger. It's no different than going to the gym, lifting weights, or, you know, over the past year, I've been walking about 2.5 miles a day, you know, and people give me all kinds of reasons why they can't do it. It's too hot outside. I'm like, you know, all these kind of things. Well, do something. So I finally had a client, and she goes, I physically can't do it. I said, well, what I want you to do is I want you to just do minor stretches while you're watching TV. I want you to stretch your foot and stretch it out and then stand up and sit down. And within about 6 months, she changed her whole issues with mobility at a tremendous level. She had a lot more, about 20 to 30% more mobility than she did 6 months prior to that. Because you have to start somewhere. Because
yeah.
we look at this big mountain. So the darkness of the soul said to me, in order to get out of that hole, I was in such a depression, I just moved myself from the bed to the couch. And then the couch to the shower and put clothes on. but that was an accomplishment, because if you can start building forward momentum, and then the universe starts creating momentum and energy towards your life. But if you just sit and say stagnant, the universe will say, well, okay, we're going to be stagnant. And so that's the Dark Night of the Soul told me it was a blessing for me. At the time, I didn't think it was a blessing. I thought it was a nightmare.
Right.
But the truth is that it helped me grow up. So.
Yeah. You know, and for me, one of the lessons during that period was surrender, you know,
yeah.
to try and basically give it over, you know, to the higher power to, you know, help direct me. You know, I found that was, for me, a way to make life a little bit brighter, you know, and the fact that I didn't have to control everything in order to make life work.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something we all have to go through. Definitely.
Yeah, we do. And like to look at it in a rearview mirror. So.
Yeah, right.
Now, one of the things you talk about in your book, too, is about hidden programs of the mind. And how they can hold us back or prevent us from living authentically. So can you talk a little bit about those hidden programs?
Yeah, this is something I've been looking at for a long time, but really in the beginning of COVID, I really started looking at it. And it happened because I had this felt this energy of tug-pull going on in my life, where I had my group of friends that believed a certain way, and then I had another group of friends that believed this way, and another group of friends that believed this way. And I started looking at, wait a second, everybody thinks they're right, and nobody's willing to just be quiet enough to listen. And so then I started looking back at my life and how I was living my life, and started saying, well, wait a second, is that my thought, or is it somebody else's thought? Is it my thought, or is it some movie that I watched thought, or some politician, or some, you know, church that I went to, or whatever. And I really had to get authentic with my thoughts and started saying, is that really true for me? And, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. When I started going through this process, people started leaving my life. And there's a reason, because I started saying them. I said, I don't see it that way anymore.
Yeah.
And they would get mad, because if what I found is that people are not secure in their own beliefs, that's because they're full of their own programs and they don't even 100% believe what they're telling you. And so when they don't believe what they're telling you, then they're not strong inside energetically. So the programs are all those little things that have been told to you that don't belong to you energetically. And those thoughts. And so what I started to look at is that if it's not my thought, then why am I living by other people's rules and other people's ideas? And so it just really significantly changed how I started living. And so, like, you know, I look at the world vastly differently than I even did 2 years ago or 5 years ago. And, you know, like, people say to me all the time that, you know, you have to live by certain rules, you know, because I'm a metaphysician, you know, and I have to, you know, when I became a Reiki master, people said, you have to place your hands a certain way in order to do Reiki. I said, well, that's not what I'm feeling. And so, and what I realized is that there's an inner voice inside of me that's guiding me. And those, that inner voice is like your feelings, the ones that feel super authentic. And I started living by that more than what all the rules of whatever other people were saying to me. And then I started defining boundaries with people and saying, you know, it's not okay when you do that. You know, and so a lot of my programs came from my church that I was raised in, or, you know, my grandmother, who was very well-intended. And she had various rules about what was considered to be polite or not polite. Or, you know, here's the one that a lot of people follow. In order to be hip, I have to wear these certain labels or these certain clothes.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with those things. I have no judgment if somebody wants to wear a pair of Gucci sunglasses. But if it doesn't feel authentic, if you're doing it because you want to impress people, then you're living by somebody else's rules.
Yeah.
But if you do it because it makes you feel good, you know, there's nothing wrong with a woman putting on makeup, but if she doesn't want to do it, why does she have to?
So, yeah. You know, it seems that as we, you know, grow up, especially in those formative years, that we quite often, you know, pick up the beliefs of others around us and, you know, make them our own. And, you know, that's a time before we really even have any kind of discernment to be able to recognize whether or not those beliefs resonate at all.
Yeah. And I mean, I had, even recently, with my own business, I made a decision about it. And somebody didn't really like it. They didn't like the decision I made. And they got really upset. And they told me how upset they were. And I said, you know, I love you, but that's about you. That's not about me. And they got really angry, and they haven't spoken to me in, well, I guess about 5 months now. And it doesn't mean I love them any less. No. I do love them. And some people say, well, do you think you could have said that a little bit nicer? No, because there's nothing unrude about saying to a person, those emotions are about you. Because that moment was a passive-aggressive moment to try to get me to feel bad so I would see it their way.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. I didn't see it their way. And those are the kind of programs I'm talking about. And when my mind, when I have somebody else's voice in my head that's telling me to live that's not mine and I don't agree with it, if it doesn't resonate with my soul. And I mentioned in the book, too, I mentioned Isaiah 2:22, and it said, don't believe a man or a woman that breathes through their nostrils. Well, I don't know anybody on this planet that doesn't breathe through their nostrils. And so people will say, well, who do you listen to? You listen to your inner voice. You listen to the divine that's within you. And when you listen to that, then you start, and if it's something that somebody says resonates with that, then of course, follow it. If it doesn't, and that means that all of us may have a different path and a different way of looking at life, as long as we're not hurting other people, then what does it matter?
True. Well, now, in your book, you have exercises for people, and I was wondering if you might be able to share one that may help listener begin to align with their soul if they're wanting to start that process.
The biggest thing I can recommend to everybody is I don't even call it meditation anymore. I call it hanging out with yourself. And it's because the word meditation freaks people out. And so what I'm going to say to you is every night for at least start off with 5 minutes. And all I want you to do is breathe in through your nose and exhale out through your mouth. Breathe in through your nose and exhale out through your mouth. And here's the reason why, because deep breathing literally puts your brain wave into a gamma frequency. When it goes into a gamma frequency, what ends up happening is that as you start looking at things, and then I want you in that 5 minutes just to process your day. I want you to say in your world, show me my day. What were my opportunities to grow? And what were my successes of the day? You know, you may have a situation where your boss said something, you really took it personally. And you may not have said anything, but you really took it personally. And so you start to look at that and you start to say, well, what made that? How did that make me feel? Well, they made me feel undervalued. They made me feel disrespected. And then you can ask yourself the question, well, do you really feel disrespected in yourself? Is there somewhere in myself where I don't respect myself? Because the truth is that your boss may not have valued you in that moment because they don't value themselves. They felt the need to make themselves look stronger instead of being in flow and working as a team, all that kind of stuff. And so, excuse me, the moment of just deep breathing is going to start to relax your mind enough to where you can allow those, I call them beach balls underwater, to let those beach balls kind of surface. And there's a whole bunch of things that you've been trying to hold down since you were a kid. Those are those programs in your mind. And when you start to deep breathe, they'll start surfacing in a controlled environment because those beach balls are coming up no matter what. So people say, I want to go down there looking. because what's going on in my brain, I don't want to look at it. Well, the truth is they're either going to come out and you're going to react to them at the wrong time, or you can do this deep breathing for 5 minutes a day, review your day, and look at what's going on. And so, and then you expand it to 10 minutes, then you expand it to 20 minutes, and then you so on and so on. Now I'm up to 3 hours a day, and it's to where I spend the very end of the day is mine for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just literally sit there and spend time with myself, because there is an energy, and we'll talk about this in the book, that there is a part of you that's literally begging for you to spend time with it. And so, and what that means is that there's a whole other being in there, it's called your soul, that's begging for you to spend time breathing and living and experiencing and developing a relationship with it. And it feels not heard. So if you don't feel heard by your boss, it's because there's a part of you inside that doesn't feel heard from you.
Yeah.
And so when you start to really get deep in there, then that's what this book is all about, is having a deep, enriching relationship inside of you. And when you have that, that's where your foundation builds on rock, and you will really see a fundamental difference in how you interact with people. And those boundaries we talked about at the beginning of the show, they don't become a bad thing. They become something to be joyful about. And then when you want to help somebody, it's because you'll help them when your cup is full.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever spills over is what you share with other people.
Yeah, very much. I like the idea of framing it, you know, hanging out with yourself, because, you know, when you talk about meditation and that kind of thing, it really, you know, creates some image in the mind that can be, you know, just so overwhelming for some people who want to try. But the idea of just hanging with yourself is, I think anybody can relate to that.
Yeah, let me give you just one more thought to that, because one of the things people are going to say is, well, I can't calm my mind. And I hate to break it to you, that's exactly what's going to happen in the beginning. You're not going to be able to calm your mind right at the beginning. You're just a deep breathe, and all this thing's going to surface, all that anxiety, all the picking up your phone and all that other kind of stuff is going to be there. But when that happens, that's when you push even harder. Because what you're saying to your inner world is, all these distractions are not as important as me trying to have a relationship with you. And so you have to start practicing disciplining yourself, and it is going to happen. You're going to struggle with it in the beginning, and that's okay. Give yourself grace.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has really been a great conversation, Jeremy. So what do you hope that people, readers, are going to take away from reading The Sovereign Mindset?
I'm really hoping to start a movement of people really understanding who they are on a deeper level, understanding their soul, having a relationship with themselves, because I can guarantee you we have a deep, soulful relationship with ourselves. All this mess that you see going on outside will start fundamentally changing, because there will be no way that all of us will allow us to be devalued, underestimated. We won't even put ourselves in those situations, and we will give love because we'll have loved ourselves. And so that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people to find such a deep and profound love for themselves that they start operating in this sovereign mindset, and then they'll start seeing the world experience not only the magical things, but the everyday things. They'll start seeing it unfold in their lives, and they'll just be like, wow, this is so cool. And then you won't be seeing the mess that you see out there right now. And that's what I'm hoping to see.
Well, that's great. And you know, it is, your book offers, you know, so much insight and as well as the exercises for people to kind of start that process themselves. So, Jeremy, I really want to thank you for your time today. It's really been a delight, and been far too long since we spoke, but I'm glad that we did today.
Thank you so much, Robert, for having me. I really do appreciate it, and I hope everybody enjoys the interview and the book.
Very much so. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Jeremy McDonald, author of The Sovereign Mindset, Unlocking Your Divine Potential. And again, you can find out more by visiting Jeremy's website, which is jeremymcdonald.net. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.